Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of a raw dog food and company where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Guess who's back this week? Dr. Judy Jasik. How are you, Dr. Jasik?
I'm good. Like, you just can't get away from me. I'm back again.
Yay. We love it because we're talking about health stuff. And when you're not here, people are like, where'd she go? I'm like, you know, I don't know. Sometimes you got to take a break. Sometimes emergencies come up. Sometimes
I don't think it happens.
And I don't think you're taking a break, right? Because life happens and everything is happening. And, you know, you and I were talking right before the podcast about just dogs are getting sicker. What the heck is going on? We're trying to make them healthier. And you and I are kind of going, something's up. Seems like something's up out there. And so here's a warning to pet parents. Don't be doing stuff you don't know what you're doing, right? Or you don't know why you're doing it. And let me give you an example, Dr. Jasik. So I had a customer call yesterday and she had taken her dog in. Basically, she felt like this dog had an impaction from grass. I said, well, probably not going to have an impaction from grass if your dog's just eating grass. And, you know, I found out that there was a lot of stuff going in the dog's body. But here's what really bothered me. She said, I took my dog to the vet and of course they gave me antibiotics. I said, did your dog have a bacterial infection? No, they just wanted to give me antibiotics just in case. I said, well, don't do that. And that's exactly why she called. She said, you know, I don't want to do that. But why do they do that, Dr. Jasik? I mean, is it that they just don't get that antibiotics are not candy? I mean, they're not treats. Come on.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They have, you know, huge detrimental effects potentially, you know, and we know, I mean, how could they not have an adverse effect on the microbiome? Because it's something that kills bacteria. That's why you're giving it. So what's it going to do to the bacteria in the gut? It's going to kill, you know, bacteria. And a lot of times, you know, it's some of the good bacteria. And I think, you know, I think what happens is that antibiotics have been just handed out like candy for so long. Like the vet doesn't know what to do, doesn't know what's going on. Well, let's just try a course of antibiotics and see if they get better. And so the pet gets better. And then they think, oh, the antibiotics made it better. I think the pet probably would have gotten better anyway. It got better in spite of the antibiotics, not because of it. And then the more courses of antibiotics pets get put on for a variety of things, they end up getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And we see more and more recurrence of things like gut issues, vomiting, diarrhea, skin issues. And then I end up seeing them, you know, six courses of antibiotics and Apoquil and Cytopoint and all of this stuff. And then it can be challenging to sort all that out. But the bottom line, what happens is, you know, I end up seeing people that say this stuff, you know, the first couple rounds, it helped a little, but now it's not helping at all. It's because you're, you know, you're wiping out the microbiome. So yeah, make sure that the treatment is targeted. There's definitely a place for conventional medicine and definitely a place for antibiotics in some cases. But like you said, Dee Dee, make sure that it is a bacterial infection and that they know that's what they're treating. You know, what symptoms are we going to look for that, you know, the pet is actually responding to the antibiotics? Like say you had a bite wound, you know, dogs get in a fight, and I've seen some really nasty abscesses like from bite wounds. They almost always get infected. I'll start those animals on antibiotics because you don't want all that infection going deep in the tissue. But then you look when the wound's healing, okay, you know, you're done. When the pet is sick for some other reason and they just put them on antibiotics just because, which is really why they're doing it. Oh, I don't know what's going on, but let's just try some antibiotics. I think there's this mentality that that's what people want. People want to leave the clinic with their prescription for their dog. If they don't leave with a bottle of pills, then they're not going to be happy. I think that's what veterinarians think. And I think people would actually be way happier with some education and information about what's going on with their pet.
Yeah. And I was thinking about our pet parents yesterday and how it is so easy just answering questions or saying yes, or, you know, kind of going along with this authority figure, right? Which is the vet. And let me explain this. So yesterday Rick and I went in to have our skin, you know, dermatologist looked at, right? Because we live up here in the mountains. Obviously you want to make sure that you don't have some sort of skin cancer forming, right? Mm-hmm. But this was really funny, Dr. Jasek. And you know, I do a lot of research. You do a lot of research, but I fell right into this trap. And let me tell you why. I'm there to have my skin looked at. Mm-hmm. A girl came in and she's asking questions, right? Have you had cancer in your family? Blah, 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 blah. And she asked this question. Have you had your flu shot?
Right. Cause that's got a lot to do with the skin.
Well, I answered the question. I got home and I said, what? It hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, why did I answer that question? Why did I not turn around and say, what does that have to do with looking at my skin? And I tell you what, Dr. Jasek, it frightened me. Because I said, no, I've never had the flu shot. I never will have the flu shot. And I thought, well, there you go. I'm on somebody's hit list now, you know? But seriously, I was so mad at myself. And I actually am going to call up there today and I'm going to say, why did you guys ask me that question? And what do you do with that information? And what did that have to do with me being there?
Right. It's a great question. It's about selling vaccines, just like pets. You know, people cannot get into a lot of clinics for anything unless their pets are current on vaccines. And you shouldn't be vaccinating sick pets anyway. So if a pet is sick, why are they telling them, well, you can't come in, you know, without vaccines? They're of course happy to vaccinate them when the pet walks in the door, but you shouldn't be vaccinating sick pets. So, you know, it's such a big push, and it's because they're a big money maker. I mean, really, that's the bottom line. There's absolutely no vaccine recommendations as far as how often pets should get them that has not come from the vaccine industry. There's no independent research that says, oh, your pet, you know, should have such and such, you know, vaccine at these intervals, and they're going to be healthier because of it. All the information comes from the vaccine industry, the companies making them. So yeah, no conflict of interest there.
Wait, you're not possibly saying that there's no scientific research.
Yeah, Didi, that is what I'm saying.
You know what? And it's funny, we're talking about vaccines. So I was looking at this article today about vaccines, as we always do. But here's an interesting question to ask your conventional vet when you go in and they say, hey, dog needs a vaccine. Because this is what I ask when I go into Costco and they're pushing the damn flu shot. Mm-hmm. And the question is this, what ingredients are in that particular vaccine? What ingredients? And I would bet you $10,000 that your vet doesn't know, has no idea. And what their typical response is going to be, they're safe for your dogs and vaccine reactions are rare, right? And the thing about it is that they may really not know, because what my research shows is that manufacturers of these vaccines hide behind descriptions like trade secret or proprietary information when they report what's in the vaccine. And in this article, it says, you know, what's really shocking is that the government agency responsible for drug safety lets companies get away with hiding their ingredients. And I was in Walgreens yesterday, and nothing makes me madder than their little thing that they play over the loudspeakers. In order to be safe, the CDC recommends blah, 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 blah. And I'm walking by a gentleman. I'm totally by myself. And I say out loud, as if anybody trusts the CDC today.
Right. And what did he do?
He looked at me like I was an alien and scurried away. Yeah. But the thing about it is that
who needs a mask, Dee Dee? Just keep saying stuff like that, and nobody's going to come near you. And so there's no chance of you getting anything.
That's fine. That is totally fine with me. But, you know, it's sort of like, Dr. Jasek, I say it for myself, because it's like, stop trying to brainwash me. Right? Thanks. If you say it enough time, every single time you go in a grocery store, every single time you go in Walgreens, people start to believe it. And you've got to push back in your own brain. Talk to yourself, read stuff, and question. And that made me so mad that I thought I was so good at this. And I get in the doctor's office yesterday and I answer the question, have you had a flu shot? I should have said, this really none of your business, has nothing to do with today.
Right. Exactly. You know, I went to go visit my mom. My mom's still in rehab after her last fall, and she had to have a 2-week quarantine there. And then now she's out of quarantine, you know, like my mom is like out and about and high risk, right? And so we finally get to go visit, but the visitation rules are it can only be one visit per week. It can be two people at a time. You have to make an appointment, and then they put you in like a conference room. You have to social distance the whole time. So I go in and wearing my mask. They give you a face shield. They require a COVID test. They do the rapid test. And then they sit you in a room with a guard. Employee, but it felt like a guard. I felt like I was visiting a prison.
Same thing.
You know, and like my mom was in her wheelchair and she was like moving around a little bit. She started to move a little closer to us. This gal like starts to get up like, oh no, you know, social distance. But yet these staff members can, you know, interact with her all day long. Where are they going? Like they're like some superpower that can't get this stuff, but family can't come visit. The rules are just so, so messed up. And then it's all about got to get the vaccine. Well, even Fauci said the vaccine is not going to keep you from getting it or keep you from transmitting it. So why are we getting it?
You know? Well, first of all, the definition of a vaccine is that you get immunity.
Right.
Okay. So if you're not going to get immunity, why are we calling it a vaccine? And I did some research the other day. I was listening to Dr. Holtz out of Houston, Texas. And he was saying, look, it's not a vaccine. This is called experimental gene therapy. And in order for them to get by with this experimental gene therapy, they call it a vaccine. Now, what do we know about that? Well, we do know that all of the vaccine manufacturers have total immunity in any type of lawsuits. And when I was looking, doing some more research, 40,000 adverse reactions so far, and many people are dying. And Dr. Sherry Timpenny was talking about this, saying, look, in 3 to 6 months, and 6 months to a year and a half, this is when we're going to really start seeing the adverse effects, autoimmune disease, all of these type of things from these vaccines. And because the doctors aren't doing their research or they're in the club of I don't want to push back and I don't want to really know anything other than what I know that's acceptable, they will say, oh, well, we need to give you another vaccine.
Right. So and that's the thing about vaccine related illnesses. They go unrecognized. That's like, you know, you're saying people take their dogs into the vet and they're told, oh, you know, these vaccines are perfectly safe. So they're considered perfectly safe if you give it and the dog doesn't drop dead there in front of you. They walk it, they can walk out the door, then those vaccines are perfectly safe. But I ask always about vaccine history, and I look at, you know, can we connect the dots between the most recent onset of symptoms and vaccines? You know, young dogs, I had the other day, I had like three in a row, like young dogs, less than 2 years old, itchy skin stuff. You know, and I know that all comes from those early vaccines. They just disrupt the immune system. They have all these vaccines when they're young and those immune systems are developing, and that sets off these inflammatory reactions. And then if they're on a kibble diet while they're getting vaccinated, the whole microbiome is disrupted. And it causes a big disruption in the immune system. And it just doesn't get recognized. Just doesn't get recognized. I've had clients that actually believe that their pet symptoms were due to the vaccines because of the timing. Like my dog was perfectly fine and then went in and got vaccinated and now it's like really sick. And they will be told there's just absolutely no way this could be the vaccine. They don't know what caused it. They don't know why the dog is sick, but they do know that it can't be the vaccines. Like, how is that possible? Like, you don't know what caused it, but you're certain it's not the vaccines. Because why? Because the pharmaceutical rep told you that? You know, and I think it's going to be the same thing with this COVID vaccine. You know, people will get sicker, but it won't be correlated, you know, with the vaccine. It's like you said, they're going to use it. Oh, I guess we need to do more boosters then. And then they'll start doing more and more, you know, rounds of the vaccine. And they're just going to keep pushing it out there. Cause I think that's the big agenda.
Of course. And here are some things that you can ask. If you don't believe us, when you go into for a vaccine, you can ask your vet, can you show me the test that states that vaccines are safe, necessary, or even effective? Okay. Can you show me those tests? You're probably going to tick off a vet. Then can you show me the studies that the gene impact of vaccines, that there's no relevance, right? That the genes are not being impacted by vaccines. And then the other one you can ask is, are there any safety studies comparing vaccinated dogs to unvaccinated dogs? Are there any studies, any populations, any groups of dogs? Have we done any studies on that? That would be a very interesting thing to ask. And I'm not certain why we're so opposed to asking questions. Maybe we just don't know the questions to ask.
You know, I think that's part of it. I think it doesn't occur to people. But, you know, the other problem now around this is people don't get to go into the clinics. And they are lucky if they actually get to talk to the vet on the phone. I mean, I hear this all the time, like what the vet will, you know, tell the, you know, technician, you know, what they're going to do or what they recommend. And then the technician communicates with the client. And I see so many clients that are so frustrated. Like, I just want to talk to the doctor. I just would feel better if I could hear it right out of the doctor's mouth. Cause something, nothing against, you know, technicians, but things always get lost in translation. And, you know, it goes from the vet to the tech, and the tech tells the client, and the client asks questions and goes back to the vet, and that's just not good communication. So it's getting harder for people to even ask these questions. And I think, I just think there's a bigger agenda behind this. Like, who's deciding that people can't go in with their pets? I mean, there's no rules. There's no mandate that says that you can't walk into a vet clinic. You can walk into the grocery store. You can, if you got a doctor's appointment yourself, you go in. Why can't you go in with your with your pets.
What? Yeah. What is that all about? As a matter of fact, one of my good friends came over yesterday and she was just beside herself. She was ticked, actually. Mm-hmm. Went to a vet up here, and basically they do this lockbox type thing. So if you're coming mm-hmm. to get certain things, they do a lockbox, and she couldn't get the lockbox open. So she opened up the door and she said they literally were like putting their hand out, shaking their hand. No, 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 no. We're not letting anyone in. No, no, no. And I'm just like, what is going on? She was so mad. She said, I am just done with them. That is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes no sense. It makes zero sense. And when you think about it, think about this. We're going to the grocery store. All right. We have been in our cars without a mask on, right? Maybe we've coughed. Who knows? Sneezed. Then we go into the grocery store and we're going to touch things in the grocery store. But by God, you better have a mask on.
Mm-hmm, right.
I there was another funny incident. We went to a restaurant the other night on the way home from work. BJ's big place, and they have spent ungodly amounts of money on plexiglass around the booths, you know, mm-hmm. around everything. I mean, just plexiglass everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they would only give us one paper menu. And when I asked, why did we only get one paper menu? Well, we're trying to cut down on, you know, using paper. I said, you just spent a gazillion bucks on all of this fiber, I mean, on this plexiglass, but you want to save a sheet of paper?
You know what they need to do is they need to encase those menus in the plexiglass. And then they can just disinfect them. That's, or maybe just put post them on the plexiglass, like embed them in the plexiglass around the booths, and then don't worry about it.
I said, and I turned to Rick and I said, see, you cannot just go, oh, okay. Because now you are saying the senseless, the nonsensical makes sense. Stop training your brain to accept nonsensical stuff. You need to call it out when it's nonsensical. Say it. If right. not for anyone else, say it for yourself.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, we've talked about before. If you hear something over and over and over and over again, people start to believe it. Doesn't have to be true. But when you sit, I look at these, you know, COVID rules, and it just doesn't make any sense sometimes. Like, I can go grocery shopping, but I can't go visit my 99-year-old mom, you know, like, what's up with that? I mean, you know, and I've been in her facility where she was living before. I was in there like every week. I have been since this whole COVID thing started. You know, I'm careful. I, you know, I do wear a mask and when I go in, because that's their rules. And I respect that, but you know, she hasn't gotten sick, but now she's in this rehab facility and oh my God, it's this like total lockdown. It's just, it's ridiculous. And going to visit, it's like, it's so uncomfortable because you're sitting there with a, you know, a bodyguard and you have to be 8 feet away and you got this mask and face shield. You can't even understand each other. It just doesn't make any sense. If the rules made sense, then, you know, it could be like, okay, well, I can see where that might make sense, might have, you know, some value, but it's like you said, Didi, you got to look at stuff logical and say, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense here.
Well, and I heard something interesting the other day and it's so true. Do you know how Hitler got the Germans to be okay with killing the Jews?
Mm-mm.
They were infected. They were diseased. They made those people diseased. So they were going to hurt their families. They were going to hurt other people. Therefore, that was okay. That was okay. We sent them into the gas chambers because mm-hmm. they're diseased. And honest to goodness, I see this today. I see this mentality happening today in our society, that it's okay if you get shamed. It's okay if you get criticized. It's okay if you get beat up because you're going to harm me. And I want to say, oh my gosh, you know, when the information really is, if it is able to come to absolute light, are you going to feel shameful of your behavior? Maybe that you were encouraging people to go get a vaccine, or shaming people that they had a mask on. I mean, will you be able to live with yourself if you have taken this approach? That.
Ooh. Yeah, I think being this whole idea of being afraid of each other, like you're saying, oh, that person doesn't have a mask. They're gonna contaminate me. They're gonna make me sick. It just creates more divisiveness in our culture, and we don't need more of that, because we have politics and all sorts of religion and all sorts of things that can keep people divided. But now we're supposed to be afraid of each other. And if you talk to somebody, well, their face has to be covered in a mask, so you can't see their, you know, facial expressions. And, you know, how are babies going to learn how to interact with people socially where they go out in public and everybody's got their face covered up? Like, I think that's going to really mess up these, you know, youngsters developing in this, you know, this day and time where everybody is, you know, covered up with masks, and, you know, the only real faces they see are their parents. I just think it's messed up, and it's really bad for our culture. We need to be able to come together and support each other and help each other out, not be afraid of each other.
Right. I mean, it blows my mind. So it's sort of like the lepto vaccine for me. It's like, if the risk, which there is huge risk in the lepto vaccine, there's huge risk in this vaccine, if you listen to the people who are not involved in these organizations that are making money, right? If you listen to the people who have been fighting for people's health, right? We're fighting for dogs' health. Mm-hmm. You've got to decide what you're going to believe. But it is so crazy to me that we don't look at what the risk versus the reward is. And if this disease, and they have shown this, or this virus or whatever it is. And by the way, no virus has ever been isolated. So it's very difficult to say, well, that came from this, if the virus has never been isolated, but you can look that up yourself. You know, if it's 99.9 to 99.7%, you've got your own body's going to keep you healthy. Why would you damage it? Why would you go in and put toxins and things in your body that are definitely going to disrupt a good gut biome? There's so much to that. I mean, you know, when I look at just vaccines, Dr. JC, let's just take the one ingredient that is in most of these vaccines, and that is aluminum, right? So aluminum is a grade 3 out of a 4 carcinogen. Okay. Aluminum, what does that do? It opens up the blood-brain barrier, allowing neurotoxins into the brain. And back to your point of all these itchy dogs, it says that aluminum also upregulates the IgE, the allergy, immunoglobulin.
Immunoglobulin.
Thank you. Immunoglobulin, that thing. Which makes your dog more susceptible to all kinds of allergy, skin issues, inhalant allergies, anaphylaxis, and even death. So let's pump that right in there. I mean, if that's the risk that you want to take.
And I think vaccines are also a big contributor to behavioral issues and anxiety. Look at how many phobias we have in dogs, thunderstorm phobias. Why should dogs be afraid of thunderstorms? This is a natural phenomenon. I mean, fireworks, I get, you know, that's different. You know, loud noises on the TV, that's something that doesn't occur in nature. But why are so many dogs just terrified of thunder? This is a natural thing in the world. And I think a lot of this comes from this blood-brain barrier disruption that comes from the toxins in the vaccines. Their brains get inflamed from the vaccinations. Well, they get inflamed because the blood-brain barrier opens up. And what that means is that things can get to the brain that normally shouldn't, just like a leaky gut. And I've heard it said, you know, I've listened to some podcasts on the human side that if you have a leaky gut, you could very well also have a leaky brain, which means that blood-brain barrier is also leaky. And these substances that are causing inflammation, say in the skin, can also be inflaming the brain. And so if you have a pet that has just, you know, anxiety, these odd phobias, odd behaviors, I really believe that can go back to vaccines as well. And the conventional approach is what? Just like in children, sedate them, gabapentin. Gabapentin is handed out like candy now for so many things. And I don't think it does any good in a lot of cases. And matter of fact, it can disrupt behavior further is what I've seen. So if we work at healing the gut, which is going to help heal the blood-brain barrier, get the pets on good nutrition, do some natural things to get the inflammation down, support brain health, support gut health, we can actually improve behavior. And I've actually seen this, just going from kibble to raw, you know, that we get them off of those, you know, inflammatory ingredients and the inflammatory toxins that are in that. God knows what's in, you know, those kibble diets. And the pets will be like, people will come back and say, you know, they can focus. I really feel like I can train them now, whereas before they were just so, you know, so scattered and just this real disruptive behavior, like an ADD child, that they couldn't even train them, couldn't get them to focus. They couldn't figure out what to do with them. And, you know, I think so much illness in pets is related to diet and over-vaccinating. I mean, I say that so many times every day, because I believe it's true. They need to be on a fresh food diet, so we're not poisoning them with their food, and we need to not be vaccinating them, or at least minimally vaccinating, not vaccinating them over and over and over and over again, and be aware of which vaccines are actually doing them any good and doing, you know, more good than harm. Potentially, I think all of them can potentially do harm, but things like the lepto, I see such a huge reaction rate that I would, even for my own dog, my own pets, I would risk that lepto infection any day over the risk of the vaccine. And I don't think it's a very big risk, and it's treatable if they do get it. And if you keep their immune system strong with a good diet, they're not going to be very likely to get it in the first place. So this whole idea that, oh, vaccines, just if I just vaccinate my pet, then I'm a good pet parent and I've done everything I can for my pet's health. It's not true. Not true. A whole lot more to the picture.
Yeah. It is a mindset. I could say a whole lot of things, but we just have, I mean, Dr. Jason, there are a lot of people that don't do traditional veterinarian care, and their dogs are fine, right? So this is, as you've always said, it is a business model, not a health model, right?
Absolutely.
So I want to ask you, I cannot get away from the elevated liver enzymes that so many pet parents. So if you're just going in, right, and your dog has something like a bump on his eye, or he's going to be neutered, or he's going to be spayed, they're going to do a blood test, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to come back with some different numbers. This is always where I see pet parents take a turn, not always for the best, sometimes for the worse, because a vet has scared them. And with these numbers, right? So you've got these panels that have ALT, GGT, we've got all these different numbers, right? And they come back and you've got a few of them that may be high, Well, they totally scare the pet parent. Oh my gosh, your dog has kidney disease. Your dog has liver disease. You need to just get on this prescription diet and hope for the best. That is exactly what one vet told one of my customers. But I do want to ask you about these levels. Now, if we have a pretty decent panel, but you have two, the ALT, and there's one that I'm not familiar with, which is ALKP. Mm-hmm. Those two were high. And this particular vet suggested that this dog go on Denimarin. I don't know anything about Denimarin, so I wanted to ask you about this. But how can, we've done many, many podcasts about these liver enzymes, but when should they be worried and when should they not be worried? I mean, it's so subjective, it seems like.
Right. And I too have picked apart many of these cases, many cases that we have in common. And first of all, as we've always say, a lot of times there's more to the picture. So I ask all the questions. So if you think about what the liver does, the liver detoxifies the body. So anytime something is going into the body that is not natural, doesn't belong there, that needs to be eliminated, the liver is going to be working. And sometimes when the liver is working, eliminating toxins, the liver cells will get inflamed and these enzymes leak out of them. These elevated liver enzymes typically are a sign of inflammation in the liver, which can come from a variety of different causes. So you're going to be looking at, you know, all the rest of the blood work. Now, if you had elevated liver enzymes and an elevated white blood cell count, well, you could have an infection in the liver, potentially. If everything else is normal, you just have these other values pop up, I would be asking the question, what else has been going into that pet? And sometimes people don't think about things like heartworm prevention. Did they get a biscuit at the bank yesterday? Because God knows what's in those things. And the liver is just detoxing the body from toxic ingredients. Or the dog picks something up on a walk. Do you take your dog in the summertime where they're spraying glyphosate in the parks? Because this blood work is a snapshot. It's a snapshot at that point in time. And it's a reflection of what's going on in the body at that point in time. And it does not necessarily, and oftentimes does not indicate, you know, lifelong liver disease, which is what people are typically told. They get these elevated liver enzymes, they're supposed to be gone on this prescription diet, and something like the Denimarin, which I can talk about that too, for the rest of their life. They don't even look at, well, maybe this is just something transient. So I look at the degree of elevation in the levels for one, because I've had clients come into me and say, well, my dog was diagnosed with liver disease and the values are just barely out of the normal range. That's just a normal fluctuation. And you have to look at what's the normal range and how elevated are they? The alkaline phosphatase, which is the ALKP you were talking about, is an enzyme that it can indicate in inflammation, but it's present in like most tissues in the body. So say a pet had a bruise or a muscle strain, or it tends to go up in dogs that have Cushing's disease and their cortisol levels are high. It goes up for a lot of different reasons, is the point. It is in the liver. So if there's other liver enzymes elevated, it could be coming from the liver, but it can come from lots of other locations in the body. So the first thing I do is I find out everything that pet is on. And sometimes they're just over-supplemented. You know, we've talked about the dangers of over-supplementing and giving the body too much to manage, and how when we have something that shows up that's not quote unquote normal, whether it's a symptom or something like this on the blood work, that we get a new baseline. We get the pet on a basic diet, take all the supplements out, and then we retest the blood work. That's what I do. If the pet is healthy, and a lot of the pets that I see with these elevated liver enzymes outwardly are perfectly healthy. They only reason they know about this is because they went in for something routine and got some pre-anesthetic blood work. And so that's where I usually start. And then, you know, herbal support. So things like dandelion, milk thistle, Sammy is another one. That's one of the ingredients in denim. So denimarin is a ripoff in my opinion, because it's basically milk thistle and Sammy. You can go down to natural grocers and buy these supplements. I actually prefer dandelion to the Sammy. Milk thistle, dandelion root are probably two of the most potent liver support, you know, ingredients that people can use. It's readily available in the denimarin. It's like, and then it's got flavors and all this other stuff in it. So again, we're just giving the liver more to process. And it's like, it's put out by one of the pharmaceutical companies. It's outrageously expensive for what it is. So I tell people, just do some basic liver support. Maybe we do need to do a little bit of detoxification, which can help support the liver. So those are the basic things I do. Now I have worked with some cases that, you know, we do this basic stuff, liver enzymes are still up. And then I have used some Chinese herbal formulas that treat specific patterns in the body. They've also found, so people that practice Chinese medicine that looks at patterns, there can also be seasonal patterns. So sometimes the dog's liver will be more active in the springtime or maybe in the fall. What happens in the spring? We get everything's budding and blooming. The body's, you know, being exposed to all these plants again. So maybe the liver's just processing stuff. Now, I think we have to look at the whole picture, and you don't just pin a diagnosis on the pet for the rest of its life. And, you know, the other thing is we live in a very toxic world and we can't get away from it. There's things in our air, in the soil, in the water, and your pet's exposed to this too. So I think we also have to look at things logically, like we were talking about before. And is the pet sick? It's not like we want to ignore elevated liver enzymes, but is the pet sick? And why, you know, so we're going to take this pet that looks perfectly healthy, has some elevated liver enzymes. Now we're going to put them on a completely, you know, nutrition void and toxic prescription diet for the rest of its life. And that will really make it sick.
Yeah. That drives me crazy when, and I always know that the vets are going to go down that road, right? They're going to go down that prescription diet road.
Yeah. And they usually blame the raw too. I don't know if I put that in, but you know, we talk about that so much. It's kind of
that's
a given.
That's a given.
It's of course, it's the raw food that's making the liver enzymes go up. But I've had some clients that have stuck it out with the raw, and we've done the herbs. We've done these things I'm talking about. You do have to be diligent about checking the liver enzymes every few weeks at first to see which way they're going. But I have had clients that, you know, stick it out with the raw, and we do this detoxification, we do herbal support, and I've seen dramatic drops in liver enzymes doing that.
Yeah. And that's what I always say. Listen, if we can, we want to avoid pharmaceuticals. We want to go the other direction. We don't want to put any more toxic things as you just mentioned, so that the liver or the kidneys or, you know, the organs have to do more than they're required to do, right? Because we want them supporting the body. So yeah, it's crazy. So we get those type of enzymes, and then we get these BUN and creatine levels that are higher, that, you know, we see them be higher in the raw fed dogs. And so when the folks come back and they say, oh my gosh, you know, my dog's BUN and creatine were high, I say, well, let's see how high are they, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because if you're not talking with a raw feeding vet, a vet that really understands nutrition. And I have to say, Dr. Jasek, if your vet is not feeding raw, they don't understand nutrition, because you would not be putting a substandard dry kibble, aflatoxin, you know, preservative, synthetic food into your dog. Why would you do that? That makes no sense. If you, in fact, are a nutritionist, right?
Right. And you know, they don't know, because you hear these things like, well, it's, you know, it's 100% protein. You know, you can't feed 100% protein diet to, you know, a dog with elevated BUN and creatinine. Well, it's not, you know, we've talked about this before. It's not 100% protein. You know, they don't understand what the protein level is and that it's in the importance of a bioavailable protein and that there's the other things in there, the bone and the organs, and there's, you know, this mix of ingredients. They don't know anything about it really. And they just come up with one or two lines to scare people. What motivates people more than fear, especially fear that they're doing something that's making their pet sick? I mean, people think that, I think they'd rather slit their own wrists than believe that they're hurting their own pet. You know, right. I mean, that's devastating. And that is so persuasive, people, because that's guilt. It's fear. It's guilt. You're like, oh my God, I've been like, you know, poisoning my pet with this raw food. And so I understand where people are being conflicted, because they get a lot of different types of information, but I look at the outcomes that I have seen in nearly 35 years of practice, and pets are not getting healthier on kibble diets. They get healthier on a fresh food diet. And I see it transform patients all the time. And I see pets with these, you know, chronic issues, the, you know, kidney values, the liver values, the pancreatitis, the IBD, all of those can be safely started on raw. It's other things in the routine, the medications, the vaccines, all these other things that are creating that problem. The kibble, which is inflammatory, those are the culprits. And when we get the pet on a fresh food diet and the body finally goes, oh my God, I finally got nutrition. I finally got like tools I can use to stay healthy. And I see it over and over and over again. Like, I don't, you know, people will ask, well, is there research studies? Like, I've seen it so many times in my practice that I don't need a research study to be convinced. Plus, most research studies are funded by companies selling something and they're not valid anyway. But I've seen it over and over and over again. And that's enough data for me. That's the best data for me.
Right. I think the perception is that, you know, you just do a research study. There's nothing to it. No, it's a lot of money to fund a research study. And so again, you have to look at what is the outcome that is desired by the person putting on the research mm-hmm. study. Right. But it's just beyond me that we don't get this simple concept. Toxins in the body do not do the body good. So if you're adding toxins, you're doing things daily, putting food that is substandard, food that is manufactured, right? Food that is dead, dead, dead. Treats that are horrible. Medications. We have this idea, Dr. Jacek, that medications are good and some do help, but there's things in those medications that you haven't even looked into. Can't pronounce it.
And they're good for short term. You know, sometimes a pet is sick or hurt. And I have this come up with my clients, you know, their pet will be really sick and they're really worried and it's a weekend and I can't get them in and I don't have all the capabilities that an emergency clinic does. And I feel like, okay, that sounds pretty serious. You better take your pet in, get them stable, and then we'll follow up. Because I think the danger is in keeping them on medications long-term and not looking for what could have been contributing to this situation. For emergency care, short-term stabilization, yeah, absolutely. But not for the rest of the pet's life. And that's where I think so many pets get into trouble. And they're chronically ill because of the medications that they're on and the poor diets. And we have to look at, okay, well, I mean, if it's an accident, that's obvious. We get the pet through that and rehab them. But if they're, you know, it's a blowout diarrhea or vomiting, well, what could the pet have gotten into? What, you know, what could have been going on to cause that? Not, oh, the pet's got IBD, is going to be on steroids for the rest of his life. Cause I hear those stories all the time.
Well, and the other thing, we always say this, and I say this every single day. When a pet parent calls me and a pet's having an issue, I say exactly what you and I say all the time. Knock out everything, right? So this one pet parent said, well, I do a mix, you know, I kind of cook and I make my own. And my husband likes to give my dogs treats and he gives them ice cream. And I said, well, it'd be very difficult for me to say what would be going on with the pet. But here's what I will say is that we want to get really basic. And even to the point where I would say, just do a single protein, organ, bone, fat, right? Mm-hmm. So whether that's duck or whether that's pork or whether it's chicken or whether it's beef, maybe we even don't do the tripe blends. Don't do the vegetable. We're getting really basic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Because we have got to figure it out, and you can figure it out, pet parents, very easily. But all of these different things that you're putting in the dog's body because you read it on this website and you read it on that website and this Facebook group says it and my friend over here says it and this vet says it, you're going to drive yourself mad and make your dog sick.
Yeah. Right? Do less, not more, you know, and this is knee-jerk reaction. Oh, maybe this will help. Maybe this will help. Maybe this will help. And I think it's better, just like you said, just get on a basic fresh food diet where you've got, you know, 6 or 7 ingredients, you know exactly what they are, and stick with one protein for a while. You know, I tell pet parents that, especially sometimes they're transitioning to raw, and I'm like, yeah, my dog just doesn't like this one particular blend, but he really likes, you know, these two blends. I'm like, well, these are the blends it likes. You know, it takes time for the transition. So maybe it's not that the food is bad. I'm sure to say that. Not that there's anything wrong with the food. It just may not be appropriate for that dog at that point in time. So save it, feed it the blends that it likes and that it eats, give its body a little time to adjust to things, and then try reintroducing that other blend. And usually, you know, dogs will adapt. It's throwing more and more and more things at them is not the solution. You got to get down to basics. And then one at a time, you can try to add back in those additions.
Right. Right. And when all else fails, you schedule a consult, a second opinion with Dr. Judy Jasek at ahavet.com. Right.
That's right.
Schedule a second opinion, because you can take a look at people's results. You can do a Zoom call, a phone consult. You know, if you are feeding raw, I don't know how many times I'm going to say this. You need to be working with a vet who is holistic, who is a nutritionist, who practices what they preach. Okay.
Right.
I mean, that's the you're out of alignment. You're really, truly out of alignment if you're going down this pharmaceutical path, but you really want to be holistic. I mean, those two just don't—they just don't line up, guys.
Right, and you know, I hate to say this, but a lot of the veterinary profession, because of these big corporations, is a profit-driven. Not always the individual vet, but they have to meet quotas from their, you know, corporate employer. Somebody is looking at the bottom line, and these corporations, all these VCAs and all these that you see popping up all over the place, Blue Pearl is another one. They're owned by even bigger corporate. I think Mars actually owns a lot of these corporations that are buying up the clinic. So there's a corporate big brother looking at the bottom line, and they're interested. They're not buying up these clinics because they're interested in improving the health of pets. They're buying up these clinics because they're looking at making money, and they are profit driven. And vaccines and pharmaceuticals are a great way to make money in a hurry. It's like we said, it's a business model, and that is very disheartening for me to say that, but it's the fact, it's the truth of the matter. And, you know, veterinarians have minimal time with clients. They're supposed to sell a certain amount. You know, they can only sell certain things because these clinics also have affiliations with certain pharmaceutical companies. They buy in bulk and then they get discounts. So they push certain products. The vets can't even recommend services if they don't offer them. Like they couldn't even mention something like acupuncture or chiropractic because they don't offer it in their clinic. So don't be sending, you know, the clients somewhere else. Let's get them dependent on us and our medications and a holistic approach, you know, and it's a lot tougher, Dee Dee. You know, we've talked about this. It'd be heck of a lot easier to just sell bags of prescription diets and instructing people and helping them through feeding, you know, raw feeding their pets, but it's just so much better. And I've seen it over and over. My focus is getting the pets healthier. I mean, yeah, I get a business to run, but you know, I focus on getting the pets healthier and the business just seems to take care of itself these days. So I don't think I'm not missing out on anything there by doing what I feel is best for the pets.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And your homework or your assignment walking away from this podcast today, my fabulous Rawsome pet parents, is to be awake. Okay. Be aware of the questions that are being asked of you, like my faux pas, right? Have you had your flu shot? I mean, it's none of their business, but I'm in there getting my skin looked at. But the other thing is to ask the questions of your vet. Ask for the ingredients. Do your research. I don't know why we are opposed to doing research unless we're afraid to see the truth. Okay. Why would you be afraid to see the truth? You can only do something if you know the truth. Don't blindly go down a certain path because it's comfortable. Take a look, ask about the vaccinations, ask about the studies, ask about the research, then you decide.
I have found in my life, Dee Dee, that most times the truth is uncomfortable.
Oh my gosh.
Not comfortable. Comfort isn't doing what everybody else is doing. You want to face the truth on a topic. It takes some kahunas sometimes to do that.
Yeah. Then we need to start asking some questions. We need to start pushing back. We need to know what we know and what we don't know. And that's all I got to say about that. All right.
Right. Okay.
They're like, okay, I got to have another cup of coffee after listening to that podcast. Right. Right?
We will be collecting your homework assignments next week. Send them in.
That's right. That's right. Maybe we should just become very boot campy, right? By golly, let me see your research. Okay. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today. Remember, you want to start your dog on a species appropriate diet. You can do it right now. This instance, you can go over to rawdogfoodandco.com where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.